I would say, like, going into the program, I felt a lot like, like a home cook where you're just creating meals that fill you up and, taste okay. And then coming out of it, I could really see like what it takes to become like from home cook to chef to really elevate my palate, the strategic thinking muscles, and to be able to kind of lead a bit more than I previously have. And it just made me more comfortable to be able to do that. And the program kind of taught me how to become like a home cook strategist to more of like a chef strategist.
What's up, and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today, we are talking with some accelerator students. To call them students, it feels like I'm infantilizing them and aging myself because these people are all very accomplished people. Today, I'm going to talk with, in order, Dulce Vasquez, who's VP Strategy Director at Wildtype Health, Rodolfo Andres Estrada, Senior Brand Strategist at BBDO in Guatemala. I was watching videos about Guatemala recently. Guatemala, the city there, there's lots of interesting architecture or newish architecture happening next to old architecture. Anyway, Sarah Mahoney, EVP, Healthcare Communications, Strategy and Planning at Weber Shandwick, and Victoria Gates Fleming, SVP, Creative Strategy and Insights at Day One Agency. So, what we're going to do, the structure of this is I'll talk a little bit about the accelerator that's coming up. We have one happening in October. We'll talk to the students. I feel like I'm talking about you as if you're kids. We'll talk to the students about their work, and then we'll talk to them about how their work has affected their work and their careers. It'll be fun, interesting. We have an audience who will ask questions as well, either through chat or potentially in audio. And the plan is to release this as a podcast. So, October 2023, we're doing our fifth Sweathead Strategy Accelerator. This was born in 2021 from 100 classes that I made in 100 days for this membership-based summer camp in 2021 with Marshall Schertz, who was helping me with Dot. We turned it into our first accelerator, and now we've done five plus. I've done three or four for companies as well. It's one of my favorite programs. It's basically what I would, if I had a month to live and I decided to spend that month teaching, and I decided to spend that month teaching about strategy and critical thinking, it's the accelerator. That might be a weird way to start this, but that's how meaningful this stuff is to me because I built a career around this. I wasn't a planner or a strategist until I was 28. I was in agencies from the age of 20. Most of that time, I was doing digital work, user experience, information architecture, content strategy, writing content for companies like Levi's. And then when I was 28, I joined Leo Burnett, where I did 50-50 role, where 50% was again doing information architecture, user experience for companies like Rabobank, You by Kotex. Well, it's not a company, it's a brand. Pretty big stuff. And then the rest of my time, I would be writing creative briefs for Canon, Heineken, Amstel. And through all of that experience, I've just been trying to put together ways to teach that are useful, that put these kind of abstract concepts in people's reach, and then adding things that I've picked up along the ways, especially from the field of behavioral economics, how we learn, how we get good at things, playing with concepts such as deliberate practice. So the accelerator is all of that. It's like, it's, kind of like, well, my book would be my third child, the accelerator would be my fourth child, if that's okay to start weird like that. You know what? Sometimes you're a nerd and certain things are meaningful to you, and you're like, I don't know if this means anything to anybody else, but whatever. It goes for 4 weeks in October. Eight live sessions plus projects. And then we've got really nicely, I think, nicely edited videos that are only part of the accelerator right now. And it's fun. It's fun. There you go. Oh yeah, people get a copy of my book, Strategies, Your Words too. So that's the background. Dulce, I've got your work. So let's start with you first. Dulce Vasquez from Wildtype again. I just looked at your LinkedIn. And so what we're going to look at is, it's interesting because the work that I think three of the four students worked on or responded to a particular brief involving Vivitrol or naltrexone, which is this, we'll call it a drug or medication that people are using to reduce binge drinking and cravings for alcohol. So for people with substance use disorder, there's these drugs where their off-label usage can, for some people, reduce cravings and then therefore the taking of the substance. So, Dulce, the brief that you tackled was how do you get people who don't necessarily identify as being an alcoholic but are binge drinkers to consider taking Vivitrol? Do you want to just quickly run us through the 4 points? Because what we do in the accelerator is, as in a response to a particular brief, we get people to write 3-4 points, a little bit of research, and then 3-4 points. And then the 4 points get turned into a one-page strategy story, which is, I guess I'd call it a practice that I encourage people to do before they write a creative brief. And that's to solve the problem that a lot of people open up a creative brief or a keynote template or a PowerPoint template or a Google document template, and they just start filling it in like they're filling in a form, as opposed to actually doing the thinking and then slowing down and doing some writing, believing that writing will get you to better thinking, and then you do the form. All right. So Dulce, do you want to take us through your 4 points here? Problem, insight, advantage, strategy.
Yep. So for the problem that was identified after doing some research around the landscape and the product itself, is that the typical binge drinker today doesn't look like a typical binge drinker. The insight coming from that problem statement is that binge drinkers are everywhere you look, not just in bars or frat houses. And this was aiming to challenge the idea of what you think when you think of a binge drinker. It's not some frat guy, you know, doing a keg stand every day after going to college, but it's a lot of people. It's something that is present in a lot of communities of all different types of backgrounds, and is very common amongst the adult age group between 35 and 64. So the advantage that the brand Vivitrol provides is to strip away those false pretenses around binge drinking, to really be able to be there for you and identify the problem that you have and need potential help with. So the strategy around the brand is to help take it helps you take back your identity, and the identity being one that is beyond just a secret binge drinker. It's something that you can see within yourself and who you really are that has been holding you back from being a binge drinker without even realizing it.
Yeah, so this is nice and tied, and it's trying to solve a problem where some people would feel that they've just kind of lost a hold of themselves, and Vivitrol would help you get back yourself, essentially, right? Which it's a little bit abstract. Do you remember the feedback? I don't like using the word feedback, but do you remember the notes or points that I gave you?
Vaguely, but you did mention that there was more of a connection needed behind the insight and the advantage, I believe, just bringing back to what is the connection of, you know, recognizing you're a binge drinker versus what Vivitrol can do to help that.
Yeah, so I scan this. So the problem talks about, you know, the typical binge drinker doesn't look like a typical binge drinker. Now, is that actually a problem that a person might face if they're going to take action? I'm not 100% sure, but it does connect, I think, with the advantage. Vivitrol strips away false pretenses. Okay, so that's about pretenses, looking different. The insight, binge drinkers are everywhere you look, not just in bars or frat houses. I think it's connected there. And then Vivitrol helps you take back your identity. I think that makes sense. I've written briefs like this actually in the healthcare space years and years ago. You know, like antidepressant medication helps you get back to some kind of self. I don't know what the some kind of self is, insert adjective. It makes sense. There's something about getting back your identity that is a little bit abstract, but like, how do you feel about this work a year plus on?
I want to change it so bad.
Yeah. In what way?
I would love to just make it a bit more ownable for the brand. I feel like a lot of healthcare briefs get to, you know, feeling more confident or getting back to something. I want it to be a bit more ownable and relatable. I do like how there's sort of like a challenge for the audience to recognize that within themselves by just putting the problem out there, like a binge drinker could be you. But I do want to just make it a little bit tighter and ownable for the brand and just elevate that just a touch.
Perfect. Well, let's compare your work with Rodolfo's. Rodolfo, I have your work here.
Okay.
You want to run through it very quickly?
Yeah. So the issue, believing that I can solve a chemical problem with pure willpower. I think that the issue I was starting out with was that the fact that Vivitrol exists creates this belief that somebody can help themselves get better. Somebody can really just push and quit alcohol. And that was like further from the furthest thing from the truth, because regardless of what I want, my body goes into autopilot when alcohol is involved. The advantage here is that since this is a chemical, what we know, it's almost like fact that your brain chemistry changes when you're an alcoholic, that only chemistry solves chemistry. So I said the strategy is, how do we show how trying to will yourself free of alcohol is impossible because you don't even speak the right language. Vivitrol does.
Yeah. Okay. So that's trying to tackle the obstacle that if someone's ready to make some kind of change, and addiction and mental health situations tend to have a big narrative, a long-term narrative, a lot of which comes from religion, willpower, stop being weak. Just use your willpower. What's wrong with you? You know, just work it out. Just work harder. Like, stop giving in, stop being weak. And so your strategy is trying to tackle the person who's, they want to change, but they're like, I just don't have the willpower, or alcohol keeps defeating my willpower, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. I think it also came from the perception that other people have, because I think one of the things when we talk about products that are specifically targeted towards it, like have a very specific target, is you sometimes ignore the people around that have an influence on the purchasing of this product. And I was thinking, well, a lot of people think that alcoholism is something you can just stop, like quitting cigarettes, and it's not the case. So I wanted to also turn that on its head. But yeah.
Yep. Out of curiosity, do you remember the notes that I gave you?
I just remember the note you gave me about how during the presentation, it should be as strong and forceful as possible. Because I felt very uneasy about how I wrote the deck, and the deck made it seem really harsh. And I told you, no, don't worry. If I was to present this, I'd tone it down. And you said, no, don't do that, because it kills the whole story. So
yeah, you want to keep the edge.
Yeah.
Exactly. You want to keep the edge, because otherwise you get in these swirly projects where no one's really saying the truth or anything honest. And then you get feedback that doesn't say the truth and that's not honest. And basically 50 people on a project is just second guessing each other. What do we even do here? I don't know. I would say with a strategy where you go, so show how trying to will yourself free of alcohol is impossible. So technically not correct or accurate. It is possible. But show how trying to will yourself free of alcohol is impossible because you don't speak the right language. Vivitrol does. The speaking the right language kind of comes out of nowhere for me a little.
Right. I didn't introduce it, the whole language thing, beforehand, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, because you're basically talking about willpower and the problem. You got autopilot in the insight, which is about willpower. Advantage, only chemistry solves chemistry. Okay. And then the strategy sort of, it starts to introduce a new theme here, as opposed to willpower, autopilot. They were nested quite tightly together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. It seemed like autopilot was going to go one way, and then I took it a different way with language.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. How do you feel about this now that you're seeing it quite a while after making it?
I didn't like the words I used. I think that was my big issue. I wish I could have changed it. And like you said, maybe followed a certain theme in the wording I was going to use. If I was going to talk about language. If I was going to talk about lack of control, talk about that. So yeah, that's my main criticism.
Okay. I mean, the way that I approach the 4 points is that they are literally sketches, you know, and it's in the strategy story. That writing process, give yourself a page to write it better, that hopefully your thinking improves, you know, because you're looking at each sentence, you're not just rushing through into the creative brief, you're sitting down and going, oh, hang on, I did introduce a new theme here. What if I save that for a separate document and really just stay glued to willpower and autopilot? Where does that take me? So the 4 points, they're just sketches, you know, very cool. Sarah Mahoney, EVP, Healthcare Communication Strategy and Planning at Webb Shandwick. You have the longest job title here. How are you?
I'm well, and I want to crawl under the table when I reread mine from 2 years ago. When looking back at this, oh my goodness, wow, we have learned a lot.
Well, do you feel okay talking us through?
Absolutely. I will take you through the thinking, and then, woof. So my tackling of the same ask here is, when I looked at the problem, I took us to the place where people talk about their bodies and not their behaviors when they're engaging with their doctor. And I think I was being a lot more practical here about what would trigger this as an RX product, what would trigger a script. So if they're not talking about their behavior, which is consuming alcohol, and they're talking about, you know, my aches and pains or whatever, we would never get to the point to trigger a script in the first place. I see a lot of problems with that problem now. But that was where my head was at the time, trying to translate a business problem into a human problem. When I went to shed new light on that problem, so the insight, I leaned into sort of American individualism, I think, was where I was trying to go here, and wrote that most Americans believe that justice only occurs when the responsible person faces the problem and I guess is punished for it. So, you know, addressing the behavior and being punished for it. I think that's what I was trying to say there. And then the brand
also
advantage.
That's where
I must have been playing, my goodness. But brand advantage, I wanted to offer up here that this product is actually a booster shot at the real problem, which is alcohol, not the alcoholic. So Rodolfo, you were so much more eloquent when you went there too, that this is a problem of chemistry, not a problem of values. But that was not well stated there. And where I wrapped it all together in the strategy is prove that medications don't get you out of doing the work, kind of purist perspective, and are actually a part of doing the work.
Yeah. And you've used like a shorthand label for this particular strategy mm-hmm. called the work. And yeah. So what would you expect to see? I know you work in communications and PR, et cetera, but if this was like an advertising campaign, mm-hmm. what could you imagine this strategy leading to? What kind of work?
I would say this actually lends itself more into communications efforts than to advertising, period. This feels as if you're trying to change a cultural conversation around a particular disease state more than marketing the attributes of this particular product, which I actually think is problematic when you're trying to solve for what the client's brief, aka your brief, was to us. I took it as a category challenge when it didn't need to be. And I can see that now from looking at it.
Maybe. But also, this is very American because you've got the way that America, through the shadow of religion, does blame mm-hmm. the individual if they're not successful in life, because right. it means you're not getting into heaven. And if you're not doing well in life, it's because that's what God wants. That's deeply, mm-hmm. deeply buried in the American psyche. Wherever you come from, you're going to inhale it. It's just in the air. Yep. And then also the fact that you've called this the work. Americans turn everything into work. And also, I can't say Americans, right, Rodolfo? You got to pick me up on that. When I'm in Latin America and I say American, the whole room will just go, they're North American. We're the Americas. So, oops, sorry to my Latin American friends. But like the fact that you're talking about the work, I think is interesting. Vivitrol is different from naltrexone. I think Vivitrol mm-hmm. it's a monthly shot. Naltrexone is a pill that you can take daily or even before you're going out. Might not work for everybody, but for a lot of people, it just reduces the amount of thinking you do about alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about work, actually. But I think it's interesting that you went there because that's a very American thing. You know, like if you're not self-improving, are you really a self? Right? Now, absolutely. Do you have any other reactions to this a year or so on?
I mean, the cringiest part of it to me is just this intentional vaguity, but also maybe trying to be too clever at the same time, using words that have different meaning for you than for me. The work doesn't mean the same thing to every, wouldn't mean the same thing to every planner or to every creative. And I would not do that now. I would choose pineapple words, words that don't take on other things. And I would also have connected the problem more. I don't say alcohol in the problem, and I should have, and a good problem statement would have included that in it. I would see that now. It would never yeah. do that. And also, I don't think the insight opens up the problem very much.
Okay. So I have a few examples, but can you think of some examples of the problem that include the word alcohol? So for example, I don't know who I would be if I didn't drink alcohol a lot. And I don't know who I would hang out with if I stopped drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. Can you think of one or two? Alcohol is just an easy thing to consume when I'm bored. There are three examples. I don't know if you've got one. I'm watching your face. Mm-hmm. Is one about to pop out? No, it's okay.
No, not close enough.
It's okay. By the way, one of the things I learned in pitch presentation training over 20 years ago is like when someone's presenting, and if a question gets asked, the person presenting should probably not be the person to respond because their brain's focusing on delivering the stuff. So there you go. In your defense there. Awesome. Okay. Victoria Gates Fleming, let's have a look at yours. You worked on something a little more lighthearted. This is for Party City. Party City is like a Toys R Us, big warehouse kind of company that sells products for parties. And this is a brief 2021. So I think we were all shutting down again or locking down again. I can't even remember now. And it was like, well, how could you help Party City sell party products when people in society don't really want people to party right now? So do you want to take us through your thinking here?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for setting that up, because it was a unique time to be tackling this one specifically. So the problem here was that it takes a lot more to get us off the couch and out of our sweatpants these days. There was a lot of research around, you know, our increased social anxiety around this time. I think it was actually 2022, Mark. So it was like we were just coming out of it all, but no one really knew the full-term impact of, you know, the perpetual pandemic, which we were calling it. And, you know, according to the New York Times, languishing was the word of 2021. I don't know if everyone remembers that. You know, people were like, how do I cancel these events I need to get back to? And how do I do the water cooler chat? You know, everyone had really, truly like forgotten how to communicate almost and be in person. So that was a sort of interesting time. And then from an insight standpoint, I'd written here that people had felt nothing for so long. They were nervous partying wouldn't feel as good as they hoped. Even worse, what if I feel nothing? And Mark, I do want to shout out you for like helping push that insight a little bit further, because that was like part of a discussion we had. But through all the research, I was finding that, you know, people had been living in a bubble for so long and they were really excited to get back out again and nervous about how it would be. But I think the worst fear was like, what if all of these, you know, the years I've been longing to party again and be with people, it means nothing and feels meaningless to reconnect. And I think that was just a really interesting space. So yeah, obviously here the advantage for Party City is that it was, you know, it is a place absolutely filled with all the things that can start a party and stir the senses. And so the strategy here, bringing all that together, was show that Party City can help you feel something again.
Yeah. And so it's feel something. I could see that as a tagline. And I think what I liked about this was that it's trying to be very small in a very big time. It's probably a big temptation if you're a big company, you're about big parties, to do something that's really big. This is like almost like a whisper. Now you can feel something again. Buy some balloons. Maybe decorate your home. Have a party by yourself. Have a party with that other person. Have a party with your pet. Feel something again. Because I don't know about you. I remember catching up with my one up the West Side mate a few times over this period, and I would get like 30 minutes in. I was like, I think I'm done. I don't know. I'm not feeling anything right now. Did you go through that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we all did to a degree, you know, and also trying to work out what and how are we supposed to socialize again? What even is a party?
Yep.
I think it's interesting. And looking back on this now, it's, you know, I do think there are still high levels of social anxiety from a lot of people I speak to, but I do think people have remembered how to party. And I think we've seen like a lot of people getting back into these really big events and not necessarily having as much caution as we perhaps at times thought as we were coming out of the pandemic. But yeah, it does feel quite like specific to that moment in time.
And seeing this work again now, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's fine. I think it's good. I do think it feels very specific to that moment in time. And I don't think that a strategy like this would necessarily work in our current environment.
Yeah, no, it's very much about that time. But at the same time, I think the reason that I like getting people to share work is a lot of strategists are too proud to do that, first of all. And second, we're not necessarily sharing work. I never share stuff on the internet where I'm like, this is the best thing ever. It's just you're sharing work as you're doing it. And there's something kind of precious about that. And if we were working on a pitch to Party City, this would be maybe direction number one. And we're going to try and beat it. We come up with another 10, maybe get them all up on the wall and try to beat this one. But all the work that we've gone through today, it all holds together. You know, they're all good first, second thoughts. And then it's like, can we do even better? And if not, great, we've got it. To everybody, I'll open up a few questions. What was the hardest part about doing the accelerator? And also, you don't have to have answers to this and nothing has to be sycophantic. I know I'm interviewing you about a thing that I did with you. It's kind of weird, but I'm just curious. What was the hardest thing about it?
I think for me was putting my thinking into the frameworks you have, like these 4 points, and then the lateral thinking versus linear thinking. And it was hard to just really dive right in and not hold myself back to actually do the thinking, like apply the thinking into those frameworks. It scratched like an itch I didn't know I had that allowed me to be a bit more creative in developing the strategy, the thoughts that came to that. And it was just, it's been too long since I was like doing thinking like that. So it was hard for me to really just jump in and start doing it.
Yeah. I think I know what you mean. Like, I remember, again, when I was back at Leo Burnett, if I spent days doing information architecture and then I had to write a creative brief, it always felt like that many faces, the character from He-Man, you know, the one whose head you twisted the head and a different face would appear. It always felt that. So what I'm saying is that's my metaphor for context switching. It's always like,
like rusty at first, but then it feels good once you're doing it.
Cool. Anybody else get a response to the question? What was difficult?
Mark, what was hard for me, or what I thought was difficult, is for me, it was challenging to do work that wasn't for work. And it almost felt a little guilty. Like, I'm sitting here working on my professional development and I had to kind of rationalize the time. And it's never hard to make time. You make time for things that matter, but it felt a little out of body sometimes doing work that wasn't for work with people you don't work with. And I think that was, I don't know why that feels so strange, but we should give ourselves more permission for that.
Let's talk about it. Why does that feel so strange? Because the whole theme of deliberate practice, which is a well-researched field of like how you get good at things, people who get good at things compared to other people, they break down their craft into small bits. They practice the hardest bits and they get feedback from a coach. It's basically those three elements. I think it's Richard Florida who propagated or made famous this concept. The most successful people in most fields practice all the time: sport, music, comedy, right? Advertising people tend not to. Strategists rarely do. Why?
I think we take for granted that our work is a craft. It doesn't feel like it sometimes, particularly for me. I moved into strategy out of agency leadership roles and digital planner roles where I had very clear deliverables. I was, dying inside because I couldn't work any sort of lateral thoughts in any way, shape, or form. And it was all about productivity. So it certainly, I think I took for granted that this is a craft that needs to be practiced, because it doesn't feel that way when you look in on the work of strategists. It feels so effortless. And I misjudged the work that was in briefs to me before I started thinking about strategy as, wow, I mean, chemistry is just chemistry. Like, that just seems so effortless that you have no idea what it took to get there. And therefore you don't think of it as an art form.
I just want to say, I fully agree with you, Sarah, all those things. And I had a similar path to you, but I think that one of the things that Mark said, I remember on the accelerator, like day one, was about strategy as a creative act. And I think just like having that in my head constantly and being like, oh, wow, yeah, no, this is creative work. And creative work takes time, and it needs to be nudged into existence, as you also say. So I feel like that, like having the permission to be able to like challenge my own work and talk about it with a group of people. And that's okay. Like, you don't just have the answer on day one, you need to kind of talk about it more, and you can question your own work as well. Obviously that's a huge part of it. So I think that, that was a big learning for me as well.
I think that's similarly, like the difficulty I had was not trying to sound smart, especially when trying to plant a problem. We always want to have the words right out of the gate. And I think learning to just write it down and keep going. And, all those tools we have to make sure you distill the problem down into something actually useful. That was really difficult for me, because I wanted to just be like, it's good enough, or I'll base my problem off of some data point, but usually that's not good enough to get you to the next step, which is the insight, Yeah. So I think that was like the hardest part for me.
Okay. This is, I feel like this question is slightly thirsty. It's difficult to measure the results of learning programs like this, because we're dealing with conceptual thinking, creativity, critical thinking. There is a lot of subjectivity involved, even if you're using a lot of data and facts. Again, you don't have to have an answer to this question, but in what ways did the accelerator help you? And did it help you in really concrete ways, like get a promotion, get a job, get a this, get a that? Or is it just generally it helped you do the work? Can you point to any concrete outcomes?
I do have like a couple. I was able to, switch jobs and get promoted and then switch jobs again. And that's sort of like a concrete like escalation of like my career, but also not as concrete, but still kind of concrete, is the feedback I received from creative directors once I was able to improve my work. I got like the two that stick out to me is like someone called my strategy like the champagne of strategy. And the work I do for creative is just like the best feedback I can get. Like if it doesn't work for creative, then it doesn't work. And, you know, using the new frameworks and the way of thinking through the accelerator, it was perfect timing because I was able to do a new creative briefing like around that same time. And the creative director on the brief said it was one of the best she's seen in her career. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So it's been really great for me to improve my craft.
That's awesome. That's lovely to hear. Almost makes me want to cry.
I did a little.
That's so cool. Anybody else?
I use the course mark to decide whether I wanted to make the jump into strategy or not. I was getting some encouragement from my colleagues in the strategy team. I was in an account and a leadership role and senior in my agency that it was very risky to switch capabilities at that point and pretty frowned upon. So we'd kind of come to the conclusion between my kitchen cabinet of mentors and my manager that, hey, if I did well in an outside course and I was still excited by this, then it made sense to make the business transition. I would never have done it. I couldn't have experimented in an accelerator format on a paying client. It's just not the model. So yeah. This made me feel, okay, I actually like this. It was for me trying to figure out if I wanted to do this type of work too. And that would be my concrete output for an accelerator-like model.
I love that. Thank you.
I can jump in as well, because I do think, Sarah, we've had a lot of similar experience. So Mark knows this, but before the accelerator, I was already talking to our leadership team about launching a dedicated strategy team at the agency. Strategy was already happening, obviously, but within pockets, and there wasn't necessarily a dedicated career track. And so we were already sort of planning, and I was just planning what this team might look like, and then did the accelerator. And for me, it was all the confidence I needed to believe that this really was the right thing for the agency. And it was great building the community, met loads of great people, had some great coaching from Mark. And we launched the team, and now there are 10 people on the team, and we're hiring and growing strong. And so that's really awesome. And I feel like so much of the learning from the accelerator for me was, it helps me day to day be a better manager to all the strategists on my team.
That's awesome. Love Similarly, we grew our team as a result. So I'll give a quick example. At BBDO, I don't know if everybody knows, we work off the three truths, cultural truth, you know, brand truth and all that. And it was kind of long-winded, especially you don't have a shorthand to look at a strategy, digest it, and be like, this is the issue, this is the insight. And I think that tool, the 4 points in particular, gave us that like superpower to be able to work really, really quickly. So now that we grew our team, I got promoted, and me and my boss hired three new people. It's easier to teach as well. I never thought I'd be able to do that, but because of the tools I have, it's very easy to teach this stuff. And we also have every Friday we have a day we called effing insights, and everybody has to go into the CAN website and look at work. And then you have to come back with 4 points. And if you have time, you do the 4 points of what you thought the brief was, and then you do a better version. And as a result, you know, we're able to work really, really quickly, but also we recycle a lot of really nice pieces of work that people looked at a campaign and said, you know, I could have done something better. And I just love, like, we have those tools now, and it makes things really fun too.
It's awesome. And I know it's kind of a thirsty question, but I don't get a lot of I don't get a lot of closing of the loop. You know, I think a lot of people in this industry, we're competitive, we're a bit private, insecure as well. And so every now and then I'll hear things, you know, like someone will be using the 4 points and they, you know, big agency, but you wouldn't know it in public, and they use it to win a pitch. And then I'll find out like 2 years later, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So I don't know. I appreciate you sharing that. Because I don't get a lot of that closing of the loop. Got to fix it, you know. Got to fix it. Was anything surprising about the accelerator?
I can say one thing quickly: how much it felt like therapy. Well, it was just so nice to have a community of people that I really felt sort of seen for the first time, because I wasn't necessarily in this industry, like, you know, as a strategist. I didn't see myself as one, but I kind of was already doing all that work, and I just suddenly felt like I. I had a community of people. I know I mentioned that before, but yeah, I felt seen and I felt heard and I felt understood and I felt like I'd found my people, honestly.
Yeah, to add to that, I agree. Like having that community was very surprising to me because, you know, you kind of work in silos. You have, you know, your proprietary companies that you can't like share secrets. But when you're part of a community and you see like fellow strategists rooting for you and helping you and having a strong sense of like friendship and, you know, working off of each other, you really don't get that outside of your own like strategy department. So having that and seeing that and being a part of something that's very cool was very, very neat for me.
I'd say from a more practical perspective, I was surprised by how much writing there was and how much a focus on word choice and style there was in the course. I thought I would, you know, learn more research methods and things like that. But I realized, again, that was me coming in thinking this was more science than art and realizing, I mean, you should have realized that based on the title of your book, but how important command of your language is when you're building and also articulating a strategy.
Mine is similar. The fact that we're not like conventional nerds, I think. And so it's hard to pick out, wait, you're a strategist. But when people start talking, you kind of realize immediately, you're like, wait, like you're one of us. And that's kind of how it felt going into the strategy, being able to talk to everybody, especially since you can connect with people afterwards. So that was nice. But I think, also what really surprised me is I don't know if I'm allowed to spoil the strategy story thing. Well, at the end, you have to write something longer than I expected. And I think that
one
was
one page.
Well, yeah, considering we write PowerPoints, like that's a lot. So yeah, I thought that surprised me. And it was like a refreshing surprise though.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do. I remember when I started to write strategy stories, and it's not capital S, it's not a trademark thing. It's just the way I started to work. I was probably about 30 years old. And I remember seeing a couple of my bosses and CEOs, they'd always, before they presented to the company, they would sit and often handwrite or type up what they wanted to talk about on one piece of paper, right? Pretty obvious behavior, really. But then I also started to manage some people, and people were strategists are very quick to fill in the creative brief. And they're like, oh, I'd love to share this with you. And what I learned very quickly is when someone's filled in a creative brief, they just want you to say, that's great. Then they're not really looking for feedback. And so I'd always say, okay, I don't want to look at that. Just talk to me. And if they're struggling, I'd say, I'm going to do this from now on. Let's all do it. Let's write a one-page argument. It looks like and smells like a case study, but it's before the work happens. I called them a pre-brief, pre-briefs at one stage, because I just believe that 200 words, one page, it can set up a 20-slide presentation. It could set up your entire argument for a year or two. And it only takes, I would say, when I'm doing them, it takes me about 30 minutes to 2 hours per story. And when I'm consulting with companies, they're actually one of the key outputs. One company asked me for 7 of them, which is a lot. You kind of burn out pretty quickly, but I had interviewed about 40 people. So to me, it's one of those things it's one of those activities, tasks that I don't see out there. I think people are too quick for it. They want to get over it and just fill in the form. But writing helps you think better. It's like an obvious thing to say. So there's that. Also, I just want to say the things that you're all picking up on is literally what drives me to do what I do. So I don't know. It's kind of beautiful. The whole therapy thing, we've talked about that a lot. I'm increasingly doing these things on stages that I'm just straight up calling now strategy therapy, where I'll do the 4 points and then I'll bring up someone from the audience. I'll show you actually very quickly one that I did in Brazil 2 weeks ago with a guy called Steven. He came up, hands shot up quickly. We had a few hundred people there at Hacktown. Steve, I don't know if your age is necessarily relevant to this. I'd say mid-50s, 60s. And Steve came up on the stage and wanted to talk, and I ran him through the 4 points. And he was just talking about this general feeling of procrastination he has in life. He runs his own business. I think it's something to do with language, maybe translating or teaching language. And he just came up. He had good energy in his body, but he's like, yeah, I feel like I'm procrastinating a lot. I'm on the couch a lot. And I'm like, well, how's that affecting your business or your life? And he's like, I feel like I'm slowing other people down. And so we dug into the problem, and the way that we ended up articulating these 4 sentences in the 4 points are as follows. And I'm very conscious of allowing myself to write corny sentences, because you get the words down, then you look at it and you go, that's corny, I can do better. And then you write. So some of this is a little bit corny to me, but the problem as we articulated it is this: Stephen is hiding from the world. Okay. He's hiding. That's his problem. So he's procrastinating, hiding from it. Insight. But here's the thing about Stephen hiding from the world: he's really hiding from himself. that sort of structure, it's a bit of a party trick, that one. I think if you wrote an insight connected to a problem in that fashion all the time, it's not that insightful, you know, but like Stephen's hiding from the world, but is he? No, he's really hiding from himself, you know. Advantage, the good thing is, so this is the advantage about Stephen. When Stephen isn't hiding, he's like, no, I'm really useful. When I'm motivated and I'm engaged in life, I can really get into things. I'm really useful. So we wrote the advantage as this. When Stephen isn't hiding, he's useful to the world near him or near to him. Strategy, we need to show to Stephen that when he starts to hide, that's when it's time to be useful. So that's a little bit, there's a little bit of coininess in there. It's a little bit of a pretzel at this point, but then we can look at this and go, okay, from a personal point of view, next time you find yourself hiding from the world, Stephen, just say to yourself, it's time to be useful. An alternative 4 points applied to the imposter syndrome or the imposter phenomenon is, as soon as you feel that, maybe you say to yourself, I'm feeling this because I care, you know? And so strategy and these frameworks are very useful in our lives. And we need to remember that our main client is actually us. Final question for you all, and then we'll see if anybody in the audience has a question. How would you make the accelerator better? How would you make it better? Because it's a hard program, right? Because you're all working full-time. Not everyone who does it is working full-time, but you're working full-time. You're often working long hours. You're going from project to project, pitch to pitch. People lose jobs. They change jobs during the accelerator. There's a little insight about learning, by the way. I'm nervous about sharing this, but I'd say, having taught thousands of people now, when someone raises their hand to learn, it's a leading indicator that they might leave. That's, I feel like that's an insight. Okay, why? Because the person's saying, I want to grow, and I want to grow while I'm with you, but I need to see that you believe in me growing. So I'm going to test you. I want to learn. Are you going to back me? Step one. Step two is, I want to learn, not just for the sake of learning, but I want to come back to the office or to the home and work in that way. And so if a company blocks them from doing that once they've let them come in, then that company's kind of doing doublespeak. They're like, yeah, we'll let you train, but, you know, don't come back here and try to change us. And so I find that those two dynamics are quite interesting. All I'm really saying is words to buy time to see if any of you have suggestions for what happened.
I wouldn't change the curriculum at all. I would focus on lowering barriers to entering the accelerator. I'd like to see more companies pay for this to make that streamlined. The hardest part of it was starting. It was just getting the paperwork in. It was writing the check. It was blocking the time off in the calendar. I'd love to see organizations that care about great work, Clio's, CANS, whatever. I think that this is where we need to elevate the field. And this is one of many ways you can do that through continuing education. I wouldn't change the course itself, personally.
Yeah. When you say lower the barriers, are you talking about price other than the, because that can't affect
your internal bureaucracy? I think it's every non-renewable resource, price, time, fear, or like it's everything that gets you to say, okay, no, I'll do something else. Because there's a lot of ways that you can use your time, and maybe I'll just watch the Instagram videos and I don't need to actually do the class. It's going to be a lot of the same. I think that's where that's the challenge.
And just to add to that, maybe for some people, there's like a one sheeter of key takeaways of things that you would take to your boss or someone who can sign that off for you. Because I do think, I agree with you, like getting the sign off on it from not just a time, but cost perspective is also a challenge for people. So how do we make that as easy as possible? Because I agree with you. That's why I struggled to answer the question, because I do really think it's very robust in terms of what we covered.
I think for me is not so much changing, but maybe adding to it, like setting up the course to come with your own problem statement or the seeds of a problem statement. Like, are you hoping to improve your brief writing skills? Are you looking to know more about strategy basics? And then that way you can kind of see what your own 4 points framework is. If you have like a problem statement to start, and then you can go back to your company and say, this is how I solved this problem. And then you can expense this program.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would have liked a little bit more practice. I know our final project was one, but I think most of us now looking back at our work, we're like, oh, we could have done a little bit better on this. And I would have liked that opportunity to come back and like, this is a once in a lifetime audience. You don't get to be around this many strategists. And so it'd be nice to come back and be like, okay, you did this better.
Yeah, I will have a think about those things, because we've made little tweaks over the accelerators. People are often like, I want more community, but it's always 5 people. Or I want open office hours and people don't show up. Or I book them all in, I put 2 days aside, and people are like, oh, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, well, what do you want to talk about? And people are like, I don't know. That's like, you know, half the people. So But yeah, good. These are good thoughts. Good thoughts. In the chat, are there any questions about the career, about the accelerator, for me, for anybody? You can also unmute yourself and speak if you would like.
Yeah. So, Mark, I just want to bring up a question here from James Cardona. I'm sorry if I butchered it, but he's asking, they are asking, even if I don't work in advertising, is the accelerator for me? Because they work in brand partnership strategy in sport and entertainment.
Yeah. So who is this for? What level is this for and what role is this for? I find quite difficult because I think the only real answer I've got that's specific is it helps to have 2 or 3 years in some kind of marketing or advertising job so that you have a little bit of a grasp of the language. I've taught CSOs, CCOs, CEOs, people of boards through to students. And there's always a little thing that'll catch them by surprise. I've been in a lot of rooms and a CEO might go, here, Mark's coming in to teach the fundamentals, and they sort of back away. An hour later, they're sitting down doing all the exercises. So that's just to address the seniority thing, because it's like, I'm Australian. We don't like hierarchy. So there's a non-hierarchy thing here. And then as far as advertising goes, I'm teaching critical thinking. I just happen to do it through advertising. You know, and to Rodolfo, everyone's actually made this point around finding your people. The reason that I stay close to this world is because these are my people. A lot of them have bouncy brains. They have a lot of topics they're interested in. People are, relatively speaking, quite open and vulnerable with each other once they know they're not competing on a pitch against each other. So the 4 points, for example, is, and the techniques, they're techniques I would often dip into just a little bit if I'm writing a LinkedIn post or writing a book or dealing with things that are going on in my head, because we're talking about critical thinking skills to solve problems in life. We just so happen to often focus on brand, but we don't have to. So yeah, because sometimes I get nervous. I don't think it's a hardcore advertising course, you know, it's about the brain and how to make the most of it. And I hope that's not a non-answer. It's like an honest answer.
Very helpful. Thank you very much.
Like, if you present your own thinking, it'll help you improve your thinking and it'll help you improve the presentation of that thinking.
I would say, like, going into the program, I felt a lot like, you know, like a home cook where you're just creating meals that fill you up and, you know, taste okay. And then coming out of it, I could really see like what it takes to become like from home cook to chef, to really elevate my palate, the strategic thinking muscles, and to be able to kind of lead a bit more than I previously have. And it just made me more comfortable to be able to do that. And the program kind of taught me how to become like a home cook strategist to more of like a chef strategist.
I love that. I love that. That's a beautiful quote. We'll have to work out how to use that in a very spectacular way. I would just say that if you are in advertising and marketing and you're swirling a lot, usually it's because you don't all know how to, you don't have a way of working and you don't have a language to share. And so everything I teach tries to solve those two problems. Any final words, final thoughts?
Just one last thing. I just think no one will regret doing it.
I like that. I'll take that. Turn that into a tattoo. In that case, to everybody who's been here watching, thank you to Dulce Vasquez, Rodolfo Andres Estrada, Sarah Mahoney, and Victoria Gates Fleming. Awesome to see you. I appreciate you indulging me and us with like talking about this thing, because everything I do is online, and it's so surreal when people want to talk to you about it in person, although we forced you to do this. But I appreciate you being open to doing it, for sharing your work. And I love hearing about the journeys. It reconnects me to kind of, not that I need to be reconnected, but it reconnects me to like at least what drives me and hopefully a bunch of the Sweathead team as well. So thank you very much for being with us here on Sweathead today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy, memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.